Blog Talk Radio.
Only for new life. Yo, it's amazing what 365 days can do for you. This time last year, that was like talking about cutting budgets and shit. I dropped the biggest record of my career. Yeah. Being the partner with Jay-Z. Shout out to Tata, what's up? Tell me what it do. This is, gotta pick them wisely. Gotta choose them carefully. Got bitches I know that would dirt for me. Got bitches I know that don't care for me. Could've went on tour with your favorite rap and declined. Why? I'm trying to break CMG. So said I'm doing mine. It's CM9, CMA, folks have been the last street, call me back. So they miss that old guy, that old G's, old Boosie, that was real rap. In New York with three bangers, did Jimmy Fallon with Megan Trainor. I guess success won't taint them. Guess the money can't change them. This is homie on probation. Took him up to Rock Nation, let him meet Jay, told him be patient. Decisions, and lil' homie really got it. Try to tell him where to turn, he ain't learned, lil' homie caught about it.
9 times 9 is 81. I'm a 80s baby, born in 81. From a family full of hustle, youngest son. They say get that money, show him how it's done. They say 9 times 9 is 81. I'm a 80s baby, born in 81. They get that money, show them how it's done. They say get that money, show them how it's done.
100, stand for it. Anything I said, I stand for it. In a private lane, I land for it. Tell it who, then they call me Bankole. Cause I walk around with a bank on me. Shoot them Gangnam Style, put the gang on them. Twist my fingers off, I'm bang on them. Tell it who, tell it who, tell it who. Different type of people available. And any one of them can kill you. At any time, anything can happen, no. Any one of us could have been pop smoke. We must go when the most I call us. So I'm paranoid, but I line bipolar. Wear my vest and clean my gun up. I ain't going out, but I'm you can bank on it. You can put a 100 grand on it. Anything I said, I stand for it. In a private lane, I land for it. Tell it who, then they call me bank on it. Cause I walk around with a bank on me. Show them Gangnam Style, put the gang on them. Twist my fingers up, I'm bang on them. Tell it who, oh yeah. So I know what come, I do. So I love my come, I do. Nobody know tomorrow. Choro, cashew. And if a boy feel macho, make him leak red like a tomato. If I'm not dead, then I'm comatose.
Civil procedure. Civil procedure deals with what we call procedural law, or the how of the law, as opposed to substantive law, which deals with the what of the law. So let's take a look. Procedural law deals with, well, how do I go about getting compensated for a breach of contract? How do I file my lawsuit? How do I contest a will? How do I go about getting an injunction against somebody if I need an injunction? Now, that's all examples of procedural law. Substantive law would deal with things like, well, what is a contract? What is a breach? What sort of damages can I get? What are the requirements for a will to make it properly executed? What is an injunction and who's entitled to it and when? That's substantive law. Procedural law, civil procedure is what we call procedural law. And so that's what we're talking about today. Let's look at some basic terms. Jurisdiction. Jurisdiction is the power of a court to decide a case. And jurisdiction is broken down into several different aspects. The first of these is there's a geographical aspect of jurisdiction, that a court would only have power over things that happen within its geographical area. The next one is personal jurisdiction. A court only has jurisdiction over people who appear before it or who are subject to its control. And so it's generally thought that a court has jurisdiction over people who reside in that area. But what about a non-resident who is sued? You know, it's not a problem if the non-resident comes into the court to file a lawsuit against a resident because the non-resident has subjected themselves to the jurisdiction of the court. But what about a plaintiff suing a non-resident? Well, sometimes that is allowed, and that's where we have things called long-arm statutes, laws that say when a non-resident is subject to the jurisdiction of a court. And then, of course, we have subject matter jurisdiction. And subject matter jurisdiction deals with the concept that not all courts can hear all kinds of lawsuits. Certain kinds of courts can only hear small matters dealing with small amounts in controversy. Some matters can only be heard by some courts, like death penalty cases can only be heard by more superior courts or what they may be called district courts. An eviction case in many jurisdictions can only be heard by a lower court, like in Texas, by a justice of the peace or a justice court. Then we also have this concept of venue. Venue is simply place. Where is the lawsuit filed? You may have a district court, district courts in different parts of the state that can have jurisdiction over a type of a lawsuit, but there may be just one place where it really should be filed. And of course, if there is bias in that place, someone may ask for a change of venue to another court that does have jurisdiction, but just in another place. And then, of course, adversary system. And that's getting at the concept of what our system is all about. It's a system in which adversaries, a plaintiff and a defendant, go to a neutral forum presided over by a judge to fight over in a civil way to their dispute, to try to have the dispute decided in their favor. And the idea is that if both the plaintiff and the defendant put on their strongest case, then out of that will come the truth, a resolution. Now, as we do that, though, we have to follow rules of procedure. And in Texas, we have something called the TRCP, the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure, and there's a counterpart called the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. And then when it comes time to presenting evidence to the court, that's how we present our case, well, we have rules there, too. And in Texas, we have the Texas Rules of Evidence, and then there's the counterpart, the federal counterpart, the Federal Rules of Evidence. And these rules of evidence deal with things such as, well, what is admissible? What is admissible here, evidence? What is this notion of hearsay? We always hear about hearsay evidence. What is hearsay? What is privilege? What does it take to authenticate a piece of evidence to show that it is reliable and that we can use it in court? We also have the term called pleadings. The plaintiff files a pleading called a complaint, or in Texas we call it a petition, and it's filed by the plaintiff. It describes the cause of action, and which is another word for the lawsuit or the type of claim that we have. The defendant will file an answer to explain the defendant's point of view. It's filed by the defendant to contest the lawsuit. It sets out the facts that the defendant disputes. And if the defendant has any affirmative defenses, the defendant will point those out. An affirmative defense is kind of like a trump card in a card game. It's a defense that will trump or defeat anything that the plaintiff says in their case. And if the defendant does not file his answer or her answer within the stated time, then they're going to be losing the lawsuit in what we call a default. How does the defendant learn about the lawsuit? Well, that's what we call service of process. That's the legal notice that's delivered to the defendant. And it's delivered by a constable or a sheriff or a private process server or maybe even in the federal courts, in the federal system, it may even be served by a federal marshal. Thank you. Let's look at the timeline now of a lawsuit. I've put up here, we have an event, which could be the breach of contract or an accident, followed by the plaintiff files a petition in court. The petition is served on the defendant, giving them notice, and then the defendant needs to file his answer. Following that, we have this period called discovery, and that's where both parties, through their lawyers, if they have lawyers, gather evidence in preparation for trial. And you can request evidence from the other side. But this period of discovery takes up most of the timeline of a lawsuit. How do we gather this evidence? Well, we take depositions. A deposition is a questioning of a witness under oath in front of a court reporter. The lawyers are present and ask those questions. We also have interrogatories where the lawyers will send to each other or to their clients, opposing client in the case, questions. And these questions, these are written questions that have to be answered under oath. And they only go to a party. Party has to answer those under oath. We can also ask a party, an opposing party, to turn over certain documents and things. Credit card bills, contracts, correspondence, letters. I even had the opposing party turn over a shotgun one time that I wanted to have examined. So we can have requests for productions and things. That's very helpful in developing our case. Then we have requests for admission, and that's where a party will ask the other side to either admit or deny that certain facts do exist. And when you do that, that does have a tendency to narrow and maybe shorten the case a little bit and what has to actually be put on trial. Now, during during that timeline, from time to time, one party or the other, or maybe both parties, will be asking the court for certain decisions, certain guidelines, guidance for the conduct of the discovery, maybe to asking the court to judge, this is a worthless case, pointless case, it's frivolous, please dismiss it, here's my evidence, to show that there is no evidence on the other side. Or they may be asking the court to step in and help with the scheduling of depositions or other events. So there'll be motions and orders that the parties will file from time to time. The motion is where the party requests what they want of the court, the relief, and the order is a document that the court signs, either granting or denying the relief. Sometimes the court will have a hearing, sometimes they won't. And finally, let's put all this together now. We have our event, the plaintiff files a petition, defendant is served, defendant files an answer, and then we have this period of discovery. And finally, at the end of this period of discovery, the court's going to say, okay, lawyers, clients, come on in, and let's have a pretrial conference and plan this trial out. So that's a pretrial conference, and that happens right before you go to the trial. Then you do have a trial. Trial could last just anywhere from just mere minutes, I've had that happen, to weeks and maybe even months. Y'all seen that on TV. And then after the trial, a decision is made, and then we have a judgment and then appeal. Let's look at the trial a little bit more carefully now. Trial starts, if it's a jury trial, with something we call voir dire, that's what we call in Texas. Other lawyers from other states pronounce it voir dire or something like that. But it's jury selection. And then after jury selection, we have the plaintiff putting on the plaintiff's case with their opening statement, and then after the opening statement, calling their witnesses for direct examination by their own lawyer. And then the other parties in the case can cross-examine each of those witnesses. Once the plaintiff has put on all of their witnesses and evidence in that way, then it's the defendant's turn. And then the defendant can make an opening statement if they already didn't make one over here. And then the defendant calls their witnesses one by one for direct examination and then cross-examination by the plaintiff. And then at some point, the defendant will rest, just as the plaintiff had rested earlier. There may or may not be something that I didn't put on the chart here called rebuttal evidence, where the plaintiff can come back and rebut some things that maybe the defendant may have put on in evidence. And then once all that evidence is in, then it goes to the jury. The judge has to give the jury instructions, and then at some point there'll be a final argument by the lawyers on what they had presented to the jury earlier, trying to help the jury make some sense of all of this evidence. And then the jury goes back and deliberates. And after they deliberate, hopefully they come back with a verdict, a decision. And the judge will take that decision and instruct the lawyers how what that verdict means and turn that verdict into a judgment. And typically the winning lawyer drafts the judgment. And the judgment is the last document filed in the case, typically, and that ends the case, and it says who wins and who loses. So you begin the case with a petition or complaint, depending on your system you're in, and you end the case with the judgment. And then, of course, there can be appeal after that. And that is an overview of civil procedure.
Salam and good day to the goddesses and gods. We hope your daily life is going pleasant, divine. If you continue to listen to this record, your psyche is voluntarily entering the terms and agreements of all good and no evil. Anyone who is found utilizing evil will be exiled by the host. And this is a notice and disclaimer inside for the love of commerce. We never give legal advice, and we never practice law. If you are searching for those things, you will have to search somewhere outside for the love of commerce. So for all mention, we offer grace and benevolence.
Peace to the gods, peace to the gods, man. Man, can you hear me on this on your headphones, Kalam?
Peace to the gods. Yeah, so it sounded a little muffled. Try to see if you could fix it up a little bit. You can hear me clear, though?
Yeah, I can hear you. All right. I might have to take it off if it's too bad.
I can hear you better. Nah,
you
I can hear you
better. Yeah. Okay. All right. Cool. Wow. Hey, peace to the gods, man. Today is Sunday. Actually, it's Knowledgeable Sunday. We back in full effect, you know, where me and Kalam get together and we go over information that we find that is very valuable to the people. And today, we come together to talk more about the courtroom procedures, the civil rules of procedures, shall I say.
Right, and if, part two.
Part two. And we just had in the chat the guy that, and you can also find that video on YouTube if you go search it up on YouTube. But he just gave a rundown of actually everything that you basically need to know with dealing with the courtroom and the procedures of the courtroom. And we're going to go over a little of that information today as well. We're going to try to kind of, you know, fit what we can, because I'm just knowing it's going to be, we're going to have different parts of this, because all of this information, you're not going to be able to learn it in just one section. You know what I'm saying? So,
no.
But, yeah, man, I'm just glad to be able to get back to it and be able to, you know, start back at it. You know what I'm talking about? How's that? Do I sound a little clearer?
I think you do. I can hear you clear.
Okay. For sure. All right. Well, you know what I'm saying? We gonna dive right into it, man. First of all, let me ask you, Kalam, how's everything on your end, man? How's life treating you?
Life treats me beautiful. My cousin pulled up. You know, we just working on some vehicles and, you know, just getting our mechanical or dexterity in, you know, being skillful with our hands.
Right.
How about you? Really? How's everything with you?
Hey, man, it's wonderful, magnificent, and great on my end, God. I'm just, you know what I'm saying, I'm just living it up. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just glad to be able to get back into the mood of studying and having you as a study partner, and, you know what I'm saying, and being able to teach the people what we're learning. So, you know, I'm grateful. Very, very grateful, man. And I hope all our listeners...
Be in gratitude.
Yeah, not to cut you out. What were you saying, God?
No, I was just saying, yeah, you got to be in gratitude. I was just agreeing with what you were saying.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, man, again, I hope all of our listeners are gravitating to the same thing, you know, like hopefully you guys are doing wonderful, magnificent, and great as well. And if not, then hopefully you're able to, you know, manifest that into your lifestyle, you know. It's all about the things that you want to generate in life. You speak it into existence. That's what I was taught. So hopefully you guys will be speaking a lot more positivity into your lifestyle. But let's dive into it, man. The silver rules of silver procedure. If you was to go inside of the private chat, and for those who would like to call in, the call-in number, let's give that out. The call-in number is 515-602-9710. Again, that is 515-602-9710. Feel free to call in, and if you want to ask a question, dial 1. We'll see you in the chat with your hand raised, and we'll be glad to call on you. All right, so the civil rules and civil procedures, if you go inside of the private chat that Kalam set up for us today, we have, it says the civil rules of procedure, often referred to as the the federal rules of civil procedure, FRCP, are a set of rules governing civil litigation in the United States federal courts. These rules were established by the Supreme Court of the United States and are regularly updated to ensure fairness, efficiency, and uniformity in the federal rules of litigation process. Key aspects of the civil rules of procedure include pleadings. The rules outline the requirements for the filing pleadings, such as complaints, answers, and motions. They specify the information that must be included in pleading and the format in which they must be filed. Discovery. Now, discovery, I'm going to tell you guys, I've learned that discovery is one of the powerful and most must-have that you use in a courtroom. You get a writ of discovery. Man, it can eliminate your case completely, you know. Like, I've seen it work. I've seen it be put into the court case and get your court case dismissed. So believe that discovery is a powerful tool to have, writ of discovery to be exact. All right. The rules govern the process of discovery, which allows parties to obtain information from each other through methods such as dispositions, interrogations, requests for the production of documents, and requests for admission. Discovery enables parties to gather evidence and information relevant to the case. So let's just say, for instance, right, you got a case and you put in a writ of discovery, and you put that writ in And let's just say, for instance, they don't give you all of everything that you're asking for in a discovery. Well, that's a failure to give due process, which is a violation of the Constitution. And without them giving you due process, how can the case move forward? Man, that's a win. Easy win. All right?
Right.
The rule. Yeah, the rules provide procedures for pretrial conferences, motion practice, and other pretrial matters. They address issues such as motions to dismiss, motion for summary judgment, and motion in limine. Trial procedures, the rules govern the conduct of trials in federal court, including rules for the presenting evidence, examining witnesses, and making objections. They also address jury selections, instructions to the jury, and verdicts. Post-trial procedures, the rules provide procedures for the post trial motions, such as motions for judgment as a matter of law, motions for a new trial, and motion to amend or correct judgments. They also address the enforcement of judgments and appeals. Overall, the civil rules of procedures are designed to ensure that civil litigation in federal courts is conducted fairly, efficiently, and in accordance with the principles of due process and justice. They provide a framework for parties and their attorneys to navigate the litigation process and resolve disputes in a timely and orderly manner. Okay, so again, now we're talking about the Federal Rules of Civil Procedures. We're talking about courtroom laws and rules. Rules, to be exact. You get what I'm saying? So you want to make sure that you're following the rules whenever you enter in a courtroom, because as long as you're following the rules, let's just say, for instance, I've seen a couple of my own boys, when we sat down and we started going over the paperwork, they followed the rules, but they lost. They lost in a state trial, right? Correct, right? So when they lost in a state trial, they appealed it, and they won on the appeal. See, state courts are not always going to follow the rules. But when you go inside of a federal courtroom, you're guaranteed to gain victory. The art of war is to know thy enemy like you know thyself. And if you don't know yourself like you know your enemy, you would be defeated. If you don't know your enemy like you know yourself, you would be defeated. But if you know both, you would gain victory at the end. So you want to make sure that you know the rules, and you learn who you are going up against. When you know who you're going up against, man, you're guaranteed to have victory. So that's one of the most important things you should know when it comes to this paper war that we're going through. And I know it's a lot of people that's struggling with this every day, man. You know what I'm saying? Cologne, I have so many brothers, man, that come to me, man. They dealing with some of the same problems, you know, like same problems, you know. And so it's better to know the rules than to sit back and try to learn it later on once you're going through it. That's why it's good to know it and learn it before you have to go through it, so you can defeat it at head on, versus learning it while you're going through it and you're trying to figure out which way to go. You know, and I think that was one of the things that kind of got me when I got into my situation. I was like, man, I wish I had learned this. You know, but we don't really know. We don't really know. We're not taught this information in school. We're not taught this information growing up. So, you know, it's better late than never. That's the way I see it. Okay, so
I do agree.
Right,
not to cut you off. Huh? You know, prevention is better than cure. You know what I'm saying? But just being prepared ahead of time. You know, doing your studies, being diligent. Yes, sir.
Right,
and you'll be ahead of the game at all times.
Big facts. Big facts. Hey, so let's dive back into the chat, you know, and let's go to the first definition of the in the chat, and we got the etymology. We got rule for etymology. Let's go to the etymology rule. Let's see what they have. Okay, and it said rule, noun, 1200th century, principle or maximum governing conduct formula to which conduct must be confirmed, from old French rule, Norman rule, custom, religious order. In modern French, particularly, re-Latinized as rigueur, from vulgar Latin, regula, from Latin, regula, straight stick, bar, ruler, figuratively a pattern, a model, related to rigueur, to rule, straighten, guide, from pi root, rig, move in a straight line, with derivatives meaning to direct in a straight line, thus to lead, rule. Then you have, by mid-14th century, as control, government, sway, dominion, demeaning, regulating, governing, play of a game, etc. Is from 1690s, the phrases rules of the game is by 1787 to bend the rules, interpret lineage, overlook infringement is by 1680s. The manuscript with a straight edge used for making straight lines or measuring is from mid-14th century. Typography sense of thin script cut type high and used for printing continuous lines is a test from 1680s rule of law, supremacists of impartial and well-defined laws to any individual's power is from 1883 rule of the road in reference to fixed customs formerly must vary much varying from country to country which regulate the size to be taken by vehicles and passing each other is by 1805. Then you also got rule, which is verb. And we'll go into that one. It's 1200th century to control, guide, direct, make confirm to a pattern from old French la impose rule from Latin regular to control by rule direct from Latin regula. Rule, straight piece of wood, from pi root reg, move in a straight line with move and it's okay. The legal sense established by decisions laid down authoritatively is recorded from early 15th century. The meaning marked with parallel straight lines with or as with the aid of a ruler is from 1590s. The slang intransitive sense of dominant owl is by 1975 rule Britannia. Patriotic song is from 1740. All right. And that's the definition of rule. Okay. And what we're going to do is dive back into the we'll go back into the private chat and we'll see procedure. We'll look up the etymology word of procedure. All right. Procedure, which is a noun. Okay, got you. Procedure, which is a noun, fact or minor of proceeding. 1670s. Particular action or mode of conducting an action, from French procedure, manner of proceeding. 1200 C, from Old French procedure, to proceed. Specific sense of method of conducting business and parliament is from 1839. All right. Procedure. Again, that is a noun. All right, let's go back and dive back into the private chat. And let's do proceed. Okay, and we see that proceed is a verb. Late 14C, proceeding, to go on, move in a certain direction, go about one's business. Also, to emanate from, result from, to issue or come as from an origin or course, from Old French procedure. 13C, modern French procedure, and directly from Latin procedere, past participle, processus, go before, go forward, advance, make progress, come forward, from pro, forward, from prior root, per, forward, seizure, to go, from prior root, to go, yield, related, preceded, proceeding. All
right. Right. And to touch upon what you just read, too. You read rule. You read the definition of rule, procedure, and proceed. And we know that rule, it says principle or maximum governing conduct. So we could look at the rules as being, you know, a guide. Let's say that. So the rules
right.
could be a straight line or a guide, you know. So just like a ruler, you need to create a straight line. That's why they got a name. That's why they named it a ruler, right? But let's just
right.
say rule is a straight line, you know, and it's a guide. Now let's put the word procedure to it as well. We also know that comes from the word proceed, which means to move in a certain direction. So if we put rule and procedure together, we know that that means to go in the straight, to guide us in the straight direction, right? To give us the direction and guidance that we need to stay in the right, in honor.
Correct.
Yeah, so that's all I wanted to. I only wanted to input that. Input it
in
layman's terms.
Most definitely. Yeah, I like how you put that. I like how you put it. So, all right, let's go back to the chat, and we'll look up the next word, which would be default. And default is a noun, and also is a verb. Let's deal with the noun first. Early 13th century, offense crime, then late 13th, see, a failure to act. And that's powerful, a failure to act. I heard the gentleman on the YouTube station, he left out to rebut, you know what I'm saying? And when he spoke on rebut, I will always hear that an unrebutted affidavit stands as truth and law. And I believe if you go into a maximum of law, that was one of the rules. So, That was considered a default. It goes back to when you are being mailed from third party debt collectors or people that are coming to sue you and you never respond. That would be considered a default. Okay? And it's a failure to act. Right, acquiescence, a failure to act, and that is what you call a default. But let's continue. All right, from Old French, defaulté, 12th century, fault, defect, failure, compatibility, lack prevention, from vulgar Latin, defaulty, a deficiency, a failure, past participle of the failure, from Latin D, away, failure, to deceive, to cheat, to put wrong, to lead astray, cause to be mistaken, to escape notice of, be concealed from. The financial sense is first recorded 1858. The computing sense is from 1966. Also from early 13th. All right. Then we have default verb, late 14th. Defaulting, be lacking, be missing. Also become weak from default. Now, restricted meaning to fail in fulfilling or satisfying an obligation. That's also something that you have to take into consideration, because when you fail to do an obligation, let's say that you fail into do an obligation of a contract that you already signed, you defaulted the contract, which, you know, that's a whole different subject that we would definitely go into when the time is right. But keep that in mind. All right, especially a legal or prenuptial one is from late 15C, related, defaulting. All right, let's get back into the chat.
Yes, sir. We also see that default is talking about crime, right? That was one of the words that sticked out. It was an offense, and the second word was crime. And then it said sin, right? If you are in the position of default, and let's say you didn't do it, right? And let's say you didn't show up to court to answer on your behalf, right? You just went into default, and even after you went into default, they're going to rule in the plaintiff's favor, whoever the plaintiff is, and they showed up, but you didn't show up. They're going to then also issue a bench warrant on top of that. So
correct.
That is because you did a different crime again. You know what I'm saying? Because you default. You was found in default. So yeah, not showing up to court just to, you know, give them an answer is acquiescence. Nobody's here. Your silence is the agreement, and your agreement is the failure of, you know, your obligation to respond or give us an answer. You have an obligation to give them an answer on the case because you're a defendant. Your obligation is to defend yourself, and if you don't answer to that obligation, then they're going to just put you in default.
Correct. So.
Yes, sir. That's all right. Right.
You're good. All right. So let's jump back into the private chat. And let's look up defaulter. We're going to go to the etymology definition of defaulter. Now, one who fails to perform some duty or obligation. We just went over that. And that's exactly what Kalon was just talking about. You know, you've got to, and you know, like I say, this is not going to be a short lesson that we're going to just be able to cram in into an hour or 2 hours. This is going to take time. You see what I'm saying? So we're going to be going over a lot of the rules when it comes to civil rules of procedures. All right?
Right.
So let's jump back into the chat again, and let's go to the next word, which is judgment. All right? And this is a good one. All right? Judgment. Now, mid-13C, judgment, action of trying at law, trial, also capacity for making decisions. From Old French, judgment, legal judgment, diagnosis, the last judgment, 11th century, from juger to judge. All right, from late 13C as penalty imposed by a court, early 14C as any authoritative decision, verdict in a court case. From late 14C in reference to the final trial of the human race in a future state. Judgment day attached from late 14C, also from 1300C as opinion, sense of discriminant is first recorded 1530s by 1610s as a divine allotment event regarded as an expression of divine displeasure. All right, and then we have judge verb, which is 1200C,
examine, appraise, make a diagnosis. See 1300 to form an opinion about, inflict penalty upon, punishment, punish, try someone, and pronounce sentence. Also, intransitive, make a decision, decide, pose, from Anglo-French jugger, Old French jugger, to judge, pronounce judgment, pass an opinion on, Tennessee, modern French jugger, from Latin, iudiger, to judge, to examine officially, form an opinion upon, pronounced judgment, from iudicine, a judge, a compound of ius, right, law, to say, from pyrut, diok, to show, also pronounce solemnly. All right. I think that's the end of judgment.
Okay. Right. And we also can see that inside the judgment, right, it talks about an end verdict. So we could look at judgment as, you know, the ending result of the case, of the matter. Right?
Right.
So the ending result of that matter was you default, right? A default judgment. If we said the judgment is the ending result of the decision of the case, right? That's the judgment. So you put default on that, which is the failure or crime. So your ending result of that was a crime.
Right.
Yeah. So now I'm just putting the words together, like I say, in layman's terms, so I could, you know, break it down, because I know a lot of people out there, they may get lost with a lot of words. So try to condense
right,
it a
right,
little bit.
Right.
More.
Oh, okay. Well, we got the word default judgment in the chat next, so we're gonna collab it. And we're going to go over it. God, if you wanted to go ahead and kind of go over that part for me, you know what I'm saying? We can indulge in that.
Yes, sir. I could go over it. You want me to go into it right now?
Yeah. You could go into
okay.
That one, and then you know.
Yeah, my headphones just died too. So hopefully you guys can hear me good.
Oh, yeah, I can hear you, God.
All right, for sure. So let's see. So we're going to go inside the private chat, and we're going to go ahead and click on default judgment, right? And this is from Cornell Law School, and it says default judgment. A default judgment, also known as judgment by default, is a ruling granted by a judge or court in favor of a plaintiff in the event that the defendant in a legal case fails to respond to a court summons or does not appear in court. We just talked about that one. The default decision may be vacated if the defendant can establish valid reasons for not appearing in court or ignoring a summons. So they do have different types of motions. I would say that you can submit if you didn't appear into court, and hopefully when I go back into the archive, we do pull this up and try to go over that, because that's a whole different show, you know. And it says Federal Rule 37B2V
states a person who fails to appear as required in court can be found in default unless proof of damages is necessary. The default decision will take damages into account if they were included in the complaint. Default damages, when I say default judgment and rulings, could be different in different jurisdictions. So yeah, that was default judgment. We just talked about, you know, not you being summoned to court, right, and not showing up, and you know, you thinking you all did riding around, they run your tags or, you know, your license plates, and or your license, whatever, however you traveling, you know, and they figure out that, hey, it's a warrant for your arrest, and you wondering why I got a warrant on me if it was just a small case that I didn't show up. No matter how high the case is, or let me say how low the case is, right, inferior, it could be a small petty thing. But if they summons you to come to court and you don't show up, it's a default judgment. And we're going to go ahead and go inside the chat, go into Wikipedia, our last link right here. And it says, in law, a default is the failure to do something required by law or to comply with a contractual obligation. Legal obligations can arise when a response or appearance is required in legal proceedings. After taking out a loan or as agreed in a contract, failure to carry them out puts one in default of the obligations. The concept of a deliberate default was considered in a UK legal case determined in 2010. And it says DEBEERF UK LTD, D Bears UK LTD versus Atos Origin, its services UK LTD, where a contract had referred to this term. Edward Stewart, K, described deliberate default as meaning, in his view, a default that is deliberate in the sense that the person committing the relevant act knew that it was a default, i.e., in this case, a breach of contract. I consider that it does not extend to recklessness and is therefore narrower than willful misconduct, although the latter will embrace deliberate default. Before the D. Bears case, there was little judicial guidance on the meaning of deliberate default. The same term, deliberate defaulters, has been used by Her Majesty Revenue and Customs in the UK to describe people who deliberately get their tax affairs wrong. Right? So, just to touch upon what was just talked about, they also talk about breach of contract, right? So, breach of contract, that's an obligation, right? You're not following an obligation. And we did a show, if you guys haven't watched it already, about contracts. And it goes over and tells you that anything you put your signature on is a contract. So that receipt that you put in, you're signing, either when you get a ticket or a citation, or you're going ahead and just finding it at your restaurant, don't take those things lightly, because those are actually contracts. You know, you have an obligation to pay, and you agree to it. Your signature was the agreement.
Correct.
So, and what else he talks about inside here? He talks about the breach of contract and deliberate default, right? And, You there?
I can hear you, bro. I can hear you.
All right, for sure. I thought you said something. He talks about embrace deliberate defaults, right? And they also, they went in to say, you know, doing willful conduct, you know, them knowing what's going on, and there's something like willful negligence, right? I know what's
right.
going on, and I'm doing the total opposite, you know, so deliberately
right.
doing what you know is wrong. And you know you did a agreement, but you're pretending like I don't know nothing about it, you know. Can't move like that. But let me go ahead and search that up real quick. Deliberate, just to make sure. Deliberate. What was that? Deliberate negligence, or was that deliberate default? That's what it was. Deliberate. Definition. Let's see. All right. Hold on. Deliberate default and willful conduct, what do they actually mean, right? Let's see what it's saying right here. It don't have any. You would think it would have definition on it. Don't. Let's see. Yeah, that's on my update. Let's get it in here. All right, it's right here, actually. I'll put this inside the chat. And it says, deliberate default means the undertaking by seller of any act or omission in complying with the terms of the agreement that I was intended to cause harm to buyer or to was a conscious decision to repudiate its contractual obligations. So yeah, like willful negligence, pretty much. Yes, sir.
For sure.
And that's that's really it. You got any input? You got any inputs on everything, all right?
That's
kind of a detailed judgment. And we finished the part two of, you know, civil procedures. I know we're gonna be going into
right.
these different rules here real soon.
Yeah, we definitely want to jump into the rules next. We're just giving a breakdown of the definition of what you are needing to know when it comes to these words, because words can be very tricky, you know, and that's one of the reasons why me and Kalam love to go into the etymology of the definition, just to give you a clear understanding of this where this word derived from, you know what I'm saying? So but the rules are definitely next. Like, we definitely want to get you guys to know, because I was just going over Rule 8. Rule 8 in the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure is very powerful. And if you're not following the rules of Rule 8, we're dealing with a lot of these court cases, man, you know, you guaranteed to lose. And then also the rules of discovery. Yeah, the rules of discovery. You know, when you're putting in this discovery, you want to make sure that, you know, your paperwork is correct. What you're asking for is demanding, because you don't want to be sitting around asking for things. You want to demand your rights. You want to make sure that you are demanding something. And that's where a lot of people come off wrong at. And I had to realize that myself. We're not attorneys. See, attorneys ask for permission for something because they work for these corporations. We have laws set in place where we demand things. We demand it. And, you know, they have to give it to us. So keep that in mind. Man, that really summed it up. That really summed it up, man. It was a great, great, great show. Man, I appreciate you for putting that into the chat, Kalam, because, yeah, man, that's well needed to know information. That's for sure.
Yes,
so,
yes, sir.
Yeah.
And I thought we went over that show. I went inside the archives, you know what I'm saying? And I was just listening to the, like I was saying, I was working on the engine, and I was just listening to that show that you did on that, the part one. And I was like, and you said,
right,
we're going to have a part two on it. And I was like, yeah, we need that, because I have a cousin right now who's dealing with a matter. And I was like, hey, bro, you gotta watch this one. You know what I'm saying? But
right,
then when I also listened to it, it was a to be continued type of thing. So I was glad,
right,
that we went over it, you know, try to wrap it up so people could really understand, you know, why civil rules or procedures is good, and why you don't want to be in default in any type of way. You know what I'm saying? Whether it's
right,
through paperwork, right, or whether it's physically inside of court. So
facts.
I hopefully
facts.
That explained it and covered cleared the air up. Let everybody know how to move now. And I'm excited to just get inside the rules itself. You know,
facts. Yeah, man, we'll go over it. And you know, if your partner, your family needs some, you know what I'm saying, some information or something like that, man, hey, reach out to me, you know.
Yes, sir,
man,
for sure.
You know, this is what we love to do. You know,
yeah,
what I'm saying?
It's a lifestyle.
It's very helpful, you know. So but yeah, man, that concludes the show today. And man, we'll try to be back tomorrow, which is
Historical Monday.
Dang. Yeah, Historical Monday, man. It's been a while since I've been you know,
yeah,
the words, I mean,
oh,
the names
that
kind of slipped my mind, you know. Yeah,
yeah.
So we'll be back tomorrow for Historical Monday, you know, and we'll definitely have something for you guys to listen to. Man, peace to the gods.
Peace to the gods.